podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Wrap. Neil Atkinson with Paddy Fitzsimons, with Ben Johnson and with Rob Gutman. The premise of this show, to come, I've also got Ant Shaw to talk about Manchester United. And I have Robbie Scotcher to talk about Crystal Palace. We're sort of combining the Anfield Wrap and our Premier League preview show, the Friday show, and even a little bit of the coach home, because we're looking back at stuff as well. Not least because Liverpool's game against Leeds United was called off on the 26th. I mean, the last time Liverpool played as we record this show is all the way back to Leicester. Manchester United have not played against Newcastle United yet. That one is to come this evening. And then obviously there's a whole new round of fixtures that starts on the 28th and pushes right the way through. We're not going to concern ourselves with the ones on the 30th, because who knows what shape anybody, including those games, is in by then. But we are going to start off with the nature of the main focus. Rob Gutman is very much a strong exponent of the principle that just because Liverpool aren't playing doesn't mean Liverpool aren't playing. Yesterday was a good example where Liverpool had two games, Rob. Both of them, I think, can be described as obviously not the results we wanted. But the way both games go, it does a little bit. I mean, we watched Villa versus Chelsea, and Chelsea weren't convincing. And you can dress a 6-3 up any way you like. Not least scoring six is good. But 6-3 doesn't feel that convincing either, especially having spurned a 4-0 lead to find yourself back at 4-3.
No, I think if this was the City Wrap, I think we'd spend most of it slagging off our own side. Not least because they're like that anyway. I personally would have been delighted with 6-3. I just like seeing Liverpool score goals, and as a fan, if we'd banged in six, I don't care. I'd take a 6-5 most weeks. Do you know what I mean? It's a great scoreline. But me and Ben were saying, just being all serious, me and Ben were saying beforehand that 3-0 would have been worse, you know, from a Liverpool point of view. Ben said it would have sort of demonstrated control. I'm not sure it's either the best scoreline or the worst scoreline from a Liverpool point of view. And in as much as when City raced into that 4-0 lead in 25 minutes, I was turning to my lad and going, at least Leicester are proper shit. You know what I mean? That's the good news in the Bible. Do you know what I mean? That was the only. But when it gets to 4-3, you're going, I do want them to come back. But on the other hand, I do want them to come back badly. Do you know what I mean? So they lose 6-3. Then, well, City get their big win, and Leicester, and Rodgers gets to make Leicester feel like they've won the FA Cup again. Because he sort of will, won't he? He'll come out and go, you boys, that's the proudest I've ever been. And some of them will believe him. So I'm hard to know where my head's at. As I said to you before, I think I'm living in a Leicester festival. I think I support Leicester at the moment. They're everywhere. You can't move for Leicester.
Paddy, City, games in hand are rubbish. In the title picture, the wider title picture, we've seen enough of games in hand in our lives to know that I feel as though whenever we're in a title race and our opponents have games in hand, they inevitably win them. And whenever we have games in hand, something goes badly wrong somewhere. So I hate games in hand as a principle around this. But there's no getting away from the fact that City are just very much the team to beat. I think anyone watching Villa versus Chelsea could also come to that conclusion. And yes, Chelsea have got tons of mitigation. But City, to me, look a different class to Chelsea at the moment.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'm not as carried away with City or as worried as a lot of people seem to be. I know quietly they're on about an 8-9 winning streak, aren't they? But yes, I'm not having that they're the same side that they were 2 or 3 years ago. I'm not exactly sure how many points you need to win this league. You know, we spoke on the last Friday show about, could Chelsea do a 90-plus point title winning season? I'm not quite sure they could, because I just don't think they've got it in it to chase down a Liverpool or City getting to that. And I think that showed yesterday. You know, they struggled beating the Villa side. They got the win, but it was very much needed. I think although City, you know, you can't fault them scoring six yesterday, I'm still just not entirely convinced by them that we need to be terrified of them. You know, I still think, I know I'm contradicting myself here with them scoring six goals yesterday, but I still think there's going to be games where not having a number nine will catch up to them. I still think, you know, they look a little bit cheeky at the back and teams can get at them. And although, yeah, games in hand, you'd much rather points on the board, I'd still back Liverpool. Although, you know, obviously in title races in the past, you know, it hasn't gone in our favour. I'd still back Liverpool to know the task at hand and get games won if they have to and they know what's in front of them. So I'm not too worried about them just yet. You know, if 5 or 6 games down the line, they still keep winning, it becomes a problem, because you know what, you've seen them pull away around this time of year before, especially last season. I think United were only about 4 or 5 behind them, or 6 points behind them in January. We were close this time last year, and then before you know, they've won 14 on the bounce and they're away from everyone, and it's all done by February. So that's a little bit of a worry, but at the moment I'm quite relaxed about it. I still think we're just as good, if not better.
to get away with a little bit yesterday. City, firstly, there's two big chances Leicester miss after it goes 5-3, which is a strange sentence to say. The other thing is they're getting away without Fernandinho. Sorry, with Fernandinho. Yeah. You know, we talk a lot. We've had a lot of chat about squads and squad depth. Fernandinho looked finished last season. Whenever I've caught him this season, he's looked like he finds it really difficult to play on the turn. You know, he is their second best number six. There's a lot of chat about what did Liverpool look like if Fabinho's out for a few games. What do Manchester City look like if Rodri's out for a few games? Now, they've got so many good players they can all sort of move around. But I think that we, in our heads, you know, what does it look like if Diaz gets a knock for a few games? What does it look like if Cancelo gets a knock for a few games? And I think it's quite an interesting one, this, in general, is that, you know, you can decide that City have got unbelievable depth, but there's times where you look at them and, you know, I actually thought our manager was wrong when he was going, and every, you know, people can't play two good can't pick two good teams in back-to-back games that close together apart from City. He said, and I thought, well, they've only got about 19. They're a really good 19, don't get me wrong, but they've only got about 19, and that this still remains my City thing, is what does it all of a sudden look like without Rodri, without Bernardo Silva, without Cancelo, without Diaz, and without, say, two of these at once? I think they can cover for any one, but they've been fortunate so far they haven't lost two at once.
Yeah, I thought Guardiola's quotes were interesting the other day about talking about Liverpool and saying, you know, we're not Liverpool in the way we attack. And again, we're talking about this in the context of them scoring six yesterday. But if you look at that as a mad game, you do wonder, you know, with the worry about Fernandinho, do they stick or twist? Are they good enough to see these games out defensively and say, you know, we'll nick it 1-0? You've seen so far this season, like the games like Southampton at home, Palace at home, where they've not quite been good enough to do that. If they want to sort of be Liverpool 19-20, where they go, you know, we'll score two goals and we'll win the game regardless. And then you do wonder about them going forward, like we've said with the number nine. Are they good enough going forward to score six every game and win if they're going to concede three? Are they, you know, are they quite good enough either way, is what I'd say. You know, you've seen Liverpool sort of change this year and adapt, and we look a lot more better going forward than we have done in previous years. And then we've still got, at the back, we've got best centre-half, well, three of the four best centre-halves in the league, in my opinion. With City, you do wonder, you know, if they're worried about a Fernandinho, have they got enough? They've got enough depth, clearly. They've got off a list of lads. They've got to be really good at football, but whether it be for them positions or not, you know, remains to be seen.
The mad game thing, Ben, I think is interesting, because I think we have a mad game at Tottenham. For loads of reasons, we have a mad game at Tottenham. And this is where, in our mad game against Tottenham, we don't quite attack exactly as we'd like to, but also we have to do a lot more defending. And obviously within there as well, we've lost Van Dijk. They've had their mad game there against Leicester, who finished as 6-3. Apart from that, it's interesting to me because I think they've been attacking a bit better, City, since the last international break. And since the last international break, we got beat 3-2 at West Ham just before it. But since the last international break, I think our defending as a whole team gone up another level. And I just think it's quite, at the minute, and this is one of the reasons why maybe I am complacent about Chelsea, but I'm looking at City and Liverpool, and I think City and Liverpool have gone up a level last six or seven games in both departments. As I say, a mad game happens every now and again, and I think Chelsea have gone down a level, maybe even down two levels. And I think that that's why, at the minute, the team to watch is Liverpool, the team to watch is City. Chelsea, they're not quite making up the numbers, but they're not far away from that now.
Yeah, I think it, at one point it was a three-horse race, and I think you're right. I think Liverpool have stepped up since the last international break. You know, we've been attacking well all season, but defensively we just look so much better. The balance is a little bit better. Tottenham's a mad one. It's a bit of an aberration. You hope that's our COVID issue sorted. You know, you hope it's gone through the whole squad. They've all been exposed to it. There's only four of them picked it up and out, and now that's it. You know, City haven't really had that. I think they've had, you know, one little bit. I think with City, I think Chelsea are having hard lines, but I do think they're gonna just peter out. I don't think they've got quite enough to win every game. And I think whereas the start of the season you were looking at it thinking this might be one of them seasons where if you get 86 you can win the league, I think what City are doing now,
well, they're on played 19 and 47, and they've had a bit of a ropey start. And that's, you know, for me, that now tells us that you've got to be the other side of 90. I think you've just got to be the other side of 90.
And I think, you know, they've won nine on the spin. They look like they're going to win every game, to the point where I don't follow their results because I just expect them to win. So yesterday I see 4-0, you know, just pop up on my timeline and think, well, fucking hell. You know, how long's gone? I didn't even know what time is it. You know, like,
is it 20? It's not 25 past. City are 4-0. It's not 25 past.
No, we were
the early game. They kick it off at 2.
What's going on? And then, you know, the little thing happens. They get the three goals back. I think ultimately with City is, if everything carries on going to plan, And I think they'll win every game. I think where City come unstuck is if they have adversity. And then I would question their ability to ride the adversity. Whereas, you know, they start going behind, they start having a bit of bad luck. I think the nature of the manager, the nature of his personality and ego, the nature of his team is that he likes everything his own way. And when it isn't quite everything going in his way, exactly in his way, he goes a bit mad, a bit erratic. You can see his approach in the Champions League. I think that is him distilled. He overanalyzes everything. He starts thinking about everything. And I think for us, I think our hope of winning the league is them hitting some kinds of adversity, whether that's a COVID diddle, whether that's, you know, they get diddled in the Champions League, whether they get a man sent off. I just think they need to hit a bit of a sticky patch. I think they probably will, and I think it's just about whether we can win all our games. I think you're gonna need to get, as you said, north of 90 points to win it. I didn't at the start of the season, but I do now, and I think we look set to be able to do that. At the minute, we look like we're as good as that team that won the league and the team that went 99 points the year before. We look like we can do it. And I think we just need them to come unstuck.
I think there's a bit of role reversal between us and them from last season. If you maybe give or take a week, when we did Palace 7-0, we weren't on a 9-match winning run, but I think we'd won 3 or 4, I think including like beat smashing Wolves, and we'd beaten Spurs in that dramatic way. And, you know, you Guardiola gave that interview, didn't he, on the morning of a City game after our 7-0 against Palace, and he almost conceded the league.
Yeah.
He almost conceded it, didn't he? And all his words were virtually saying that. And I think, you know, this is the moment for us to have very cool heads and not to be impressed by City. For us, our job is to hang in there, to quietly go about our business, just to win games. We don't have to worry about being fantastic at Leicester or showing that they're shit. I'd like us to do that. I think we can, but I don't care if it's a bit of a crappy one. I think we need to grind, get to the end of January, and not let the 3-point gap have expanded.
City's games are also in. I think we tire City, and I think that there's a chance to do it. Like, I think that the one thing City don't want to do is look around first week of February and go,
no gap.
They're just there still. This is happening again.
Yeah.
I can see that being something which would get internally into City. But I think there's something else, which is it's easy, I think, Rob. You know, obviously we've got to go to Stamford Bridge, so don't get me wrong. That's not going to be a battle of laughs. But I don't like City's next four. If I was City, Brentford away on a Wednesday night at 8:15 feels like one of those where if City give Brentford a sniff, and they might not do, they might go 4-0 up, and if they go 4-0 up against Brentford, they'll twat them. But it might be that they get to half an hour and it's still 0-0. I don't like that. I don't like Arsenal away at the minute, where they've got something to prove on New Year's Day. That would be, again, it feels like the sort of game where City manage to have a period in the game where they ease away. But if the easing doesn't happen, it's a thing. They've then got Chelsea at home, and Tuchel will treat that like it is the Champions League final, I think. That'll be the biggest game of Tuchel's next however many, including the one against us, weirdly. I think that'll be the one he'll have in the back of his mind. We've got to prove something here because of what happened when they came to our gaff. And even then after that, they've then got Southampton away. And there's every chance, again, they just smash Southampton. But there's another universe where Southampton are just weird and difficult and horrible to play against. I don't think any of them are nice. And I think they've had a few nice ones recently. And I don't think any, like Leicester at home there, couldn't have been time better for them. Were any of us surprised they went 4-0 up? I know I wasn't, other than what time it was. I wasn't sort of surprised. You know, I think they've had a few nice ones recently, City. Everton at home, when Everton look an absolute mess. You know, they've had a few in there. Old Trafford away, which when we've gone there and scored 5 and Solskjaer's still there. I think it's actually been an all right-ish run, but there's, maybe I'm talking myself into it, but I feel there's a bit of a sticky patch coming potentially for them, but they could just power through it because they're that good.
Yeah, no, this is a recurring theme of the award-winning overview show, which we do, don't we, Paddy? And it is the right time to play sides. City have played teams, as you say, who have been tenderised. That United one, I can't believe how much they got more. They got more plaudits for beating United 2-0 than we did for beating United 5-0. I felt when we beat United 5-0, it was all about how shit United were. When City, sorry, I'm just getting really bitter now, aren't I?
I'm enjoying it.
But your point is well made, Neil. I do think Brentford's a difficult one to tell. I'm glad it is as you said, a night midweek game. I'm glad it comes in the middle of a glut of fixtures. I'm also glad that it's sort of on the edge of the precipice of football being cancelled indefinitely. So Brentford's home ground should be a lively cauldron. It also feels like it's the worst time to be playing a mediocre Arsenal, if you can say that sentence.
And Arsenal's game against Wolves has been called off, so they've got more prep time.
Well, that's excellent. That's even better. I mean, look, we've got to go and we've got to dispatch Leicester, but you sort of feel for all our sort of quiet confidence that we probably do need to go and win at Chelsea. I'm not saying it's all over, or at least match City's result against Arsenal. We can't have slippage that weekend. I think it'd be nice if City do drop points against Arsenal to go to Chelsea and then push on. But you know what? If we come out of this week not having changed the gap between us, I'm taking that. I think.
Everyone, are we all agreeing it's north of 90 points to win the league?
I think you have to look. So I
feels
think
like it now.
The thing I would describe it as, if City, for instance, let's say we do drop points at Chelsea and then we have a stinker at Crystal Palace.
No, I think they'd run away with it with like high 90s. But if it's neck and neck, would you take 93 now? Low 90s?
For us to get 93?
I think you'd win it with 90.
I'd deal in general for us on 93.
Yeah,
if you know what I mean. Because yes. I mean, not least because 93, I mean, if you just they're on played 19, if you double to 47, it's 94. So yeah, you'd have to be as good again in the second half of the season from there. So I'd, you know, if you say to me right now, guarantee you Liverpool 93 or you can play the games, I'll take me guaranteed 93 and then just watch City's matches aggressively from now until the end of the season. Yeah, I think I'd do that.
I just think on the point Rob made before about, you know, and Ben about, you know, getting in City's head a bit, I think if it was neck and neck with City, I do think they could sort of not fold, but I'd back us. If you said it was us and them neck and neck, I'd back us for low 90s. I'm not, like I said before, about thinking how good they are. I'm not convinced they're as good as they were, you know, 2-3 years ago, where it's going to be 98, 97. I think, like you said, if you said now we get 94 points, I'd be confident that that's job done.
I wouldn't be quite as confident as I think you are there.
Really?
Also, it's worth remembering, 18-19, it's neck and neck, and they live with us all the way.
I think that goes to my point. I don't think that good.
Yeah, but
as good as, and I think if you're saying we're getting 94, I think you're looking at thinking we might win there. I think if we won there away at the Etihad, that'd be a big thing, wouldn't it? So I don't know. Maybe I've not done my maths well. I don't know. I just can't envisage it being the high 90s, but maybe it will.
I don't think. I mean, it's mad, isn't it? Because it doesn't seem like it's much, but there is a big difference, I think, between high 90s and low 90s. Like, because it's high 90s from this point is everyone's got to be practically perfect. Anyone who gets high 90s, including City, from this point, you've got to be practically perfect.
Yeah.
You know, it's the remaining. There's 57 points left to play for if you're Manchester City. So to get high 90s at this point, you'd need to get, what, let's clarify, in the high 90s is just even being 95. They need to get 51. Yeah. That's shit maths. They need to get 48. To then get to 98, they need to get 51.
So I don't think two teams will break 90, though. And that's just a gut feeling, really. I don't think two will. I feel the season's got a bit of madness in it, and it is because of the climate, the times we live in, as much as anything. It's that, and also that us and City have done this dance, and things don't tend to be the same. You know what I mean? I don't see us playing out 18-19 again. I think one of us could go mad. We went mad last season, let's be right, with what was happening with the world and with our own heads and what have you. It's possible that it could be City's turn to go mad. There was no reason we should have been the team that went mad. It could have been them. And I think one of the challenges, the two main challenges, could go mad. And that would, and just settle on 84, 85.
Which is what I think Chelsea are going to end up doing.
Yeah.
84, you know, I think that Chelsea end up in a unit. The other X factor in this is the Champions League.
Yeah.
Because I think there's, you know, for instance, right now, in a really weird way, I think us and City are well best than Chelsea, but I think Chelsea are favourites to win the Champions League ahead of either of those two. Not least because I think that Chelsea come March will be cruising towards a third place finish.
Yeah.
And be able to put all their eggs in that we make sure we're absolutely shit out for every champion. So we're still having tough league games. We've still got to get results. We're not over the line yet. It's still a graft. But then we're able to go into another gear for Champions League games. That's where I think Chelsea are going to end up being able to be.
I think Tuchel also is quietly quite Benitez, I think, but with better players in the Champions League at any rate. Actually, just generally, he's a defensive coach who wants great attacking players. But he is a defensive coach primarily. And I think that really serves your interest in the Champions League.
Yeah, I think it's right, and I think it's part of the reason why they may struggle to just keep churning out wins every week. In that, when you've got to break down a team, you know, wouldn't surprise you if they drew three more games at home 0-0 this season. Chelsea, you'd go, yeah, I can see that, because you're really good setting up when someone wants all the ball, but when they don't want all the ball, you know, can you break them down week on week? And I'm not sure whether they can. I think the next few weeks are going to be key, if I'm honest. I think January, I think Rob's point about let's get to the end of Feb and still be within touching distance, within a similar situation as we are now. We'll have dealt with the AFCON. You know, we'll have dealt with possibly grounds being shut and then possibly reopening. You don't know what's what, but, you know, that seems like that might happen. You know, if we can get into that position end of Jan, I think once we get through Chelsea, our fixtures don't look...
Brentford and Palace.
That bad.
Brentford and Palace in the league, that's all
and
it is.
And then even February when I was looking ahead, I think...
Yeah, Leicester and Norwich.
It looks a fairly winnable run. And I think if we can get, you know, if we can be in touching distance and we can still be there and we're not going anywhere and we look stronger, and then you throw the Champions League in, which will blow Guardiola's minds every year, it does the same, then there's a chance then.
Okay, we play Leicester tomorrow. We'll talk about that game in specifics in a second or two. But before then, if you're listening to this as audio, you're about to get Ant Shaw talking about Manchester United. If you're watching it as a video, we're just going to rock right the way through. So here is Ant Shaw, joined by Ant Shaw, to talk about United in general, United tonight. But the thing I'm most struck by last couple of days, well, not just last couple of days, last couple of weeks, is the new manager and his absolute relentless commitment to no-nonsense where the squad's concerned. The idea that if you want to go. I shouldn't have to talk you into staying at United. He's now done something similar with Martial, saying that he's all but looking for a new club, but to get a new club, he's going to have to look like a footballer in some way, shape, or form. He's really got the luxury, hasn't he, of this 6 months plus the two years sort of consultancy. And it really looks to me like he's just using it to sort of say, this is the way it is, whether you all like it or not, this is the way it is. Is that fair?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's long overdue as well. It's a really tough balance, isn't it? Because one that, you know, Ferguson did for years, right? You know, you need to be tough when at certain times, but at the same time, you know, when a player's low on confidence, you have to put your arm around them and gee them up. I think, you know, you want, ideally, in terms of confidence, you want your squad like 8 out of 10 all the time. Not, you don't want the 10 out of 10 egos or... you know, or not having to put commitment in or thinking they're the best player in the squad by a distance. And likewise, you know, the ones that are 3 out of 10 players, you want to boost them up to feel like the 7s or 8s. So, yeah, it's been long overdue. I think Ollie was a bit too nice. I actually think it cost him his job a lot sooner than it would have done by tolerating them for so long. I think that's definite. I get the feeling that Ollie would have been exposed eventually anyway, because I think his tactics were a bit off. But at the same time, you know, I do think it accelerated that by, you know, tolerating Paul Pogba for so long, Martial giving him so many chances. And I think what was telling was in his final 4 games, it was something like 7 players started all 4 games. Where I think we shipped about 20 goals or something in that period. So I think that says a lot. He was a manager that was let down by people. He really did back. And in the end, it told.
In the end, it told. This little spell coming now for United, firstly, the fixtures are about as nice as they can be at this time of year. Let's be crystal clear about that. Newcastle away. Current climate, they just do not look like a footy team. It might be a bit different come February, but right now they don't look like a football team of any note. Burnley at home. Burnley will not have played a game for what will probably feel like about sort of 4 months to them. And they're not great against the bigger sides on the road. And then it ends with Wolves on the 3rd of January. And simultaneously, the manager's also saying he feels as though he's got everyone fit, maybe one or two exceptions. It's a real chance, isn't it, those 3 games in not an unreasonable length of time. It's tight, but it's not unreasonable for first the United to pick up some points, but secondly, for him to get a good look at everyone.
Yeah, and I think we've been lucky in that sense. You know, if you could, I think City benefited from it last year when they were looking a bit shaky. I think they had an away game at Everton, which was looking a bit dodgy at the time. But by the time they ended up playing it, they just ran over him. So I think he's been a bit lucky where we've had a bit of a break, which is good. Because when he first came in, I think he was due to play 10 matches in 29 days, something like that. So now he has had time to work with the players, completely new system to what Ollie had us playing. So I think it was a really good time for the break to come. I hope that we benefit from it. I don't want to sound too optimistic because then we're going to get turned over tonight. But you know, I do think that it's come at a good time that, and I think, you know, you're starting to see players coming back now. Even I think even Paul Pogba did us the service of coming back from Dubai to train this week. So, you know, I do think I think the scheduling has helped United. Whereas with others, you know, I'm looking at Leeds. I watched them against Arsenal, and it was like, you know, boys that were playing against Arsenal. And then you've also seen what's happened at Chelsea. They're looking a bit shaky. And because of that, you know, United have been best placed to take advantage of it, I think, the COVID breaks.
It now becomes, obviously, everyone, it seems as though at United, a lot of players have also had it, so there shouldn't be tons and tons of disruption. Who do you think is going to benefit from them? I mean, the obvious one is it does look as though Sancho is going to really find a place for himself, but is there anyone else who you think is really going to benefit from the new fella and we'll start to see it from tonight?
Yeah, I think Fred will. I mean, you know, you have a lot of United fans writing off Fred as a terrible footballer, you know, I've heard it all, and, you know, he has looked exposed at times, but I think there's... You know, football is a completely different game. When I think I saw it with a few Liverpool players last year as well. You know, when they couldn't push up the field for as far because they didn't have Van Dijk. I do think that, you know, you started to see that playing football in your own half is a lot more difficult than playing it in the opposition half. And I think, like Fred, I was watching him against Watford before Ollie got sacked, and he was receiving the ball like 20-25 yards out under pressure by three players. And then flip it forward to the Crystal Palace game, and he's winning the ball in the opposition half and having us going forward, and it's a completely different game. And sometimes, you know, you have players suited to either of those, and I do think that, you know, Fred will benefit from that. Obviously, Sancho is highly rated by Rangnick. He's had a first-hand look at him in Germany as well. Also, I think Ronaldo even, you know, I think Ronaldo was someone that, if you're going to be playing 70% of the game in your own half, then, you know, he's a terrible signing. But I think, you know, if you can start taking the game to opponents and enforcing your plan on oppositions that are not as good as us, then I do think that he'll really come into his own in that as well. It's a completely different style, and I think some players will do a complete reverse by now that United are playing football in the opposition half, hopefully.
Obviously, fancy it tonight against Newcastle. I mean, it'd be mad if you didn't.
Yeah, definitely. This year, Newcastle are probably the ones I've watched the least. I watched them against Tottenham at home, which at Tottenham I've just absolutely ran over, and they were, and you know, that's Tottenham. So you would expect United to be able to do that. I do think, obviously, Sam Maximan, he's got a big danger on the counter-attack as well. So, you know, United will have to watch out for that. But that's one thing as well. Even though we've been pushing up and playing in the opposition half, I have noticed that we are far more alert and in position to break those counter-attacks up. So before it was like one pass and he was away down the flank and nearly in. I think even, you know, Salomon Rondon and Damari Gray counter-attacked us at one point. So, yeah, so hopefully we should be able to beat Newcastle, I think.
Excellent stuff. Let's get back over. And it was a pleasure to speak to Ant, already done it earlier today. Always good to speak to him, letting us know what's happening there for United as they play Newcastle United this evening. Didn't look too far ahead, but it's a nice little run for Manchester United coming up. Leicester's team is, for me, it's fascinating where they end up yesterday, Paddy, in terms of selection. They have Amartey and Vestergaard as the centre-half options. They have Albrighton at right-back and Thomas at left-back in the first half. That's the Leicester setup. For this one,
they change at half time.
They then change at half time. So, Castagna comes on for Perez, though. So, I'll work out the shape, in a second or two. And then from there, they also keep Vardy on the bench all the way through, Paddy. And for me, that's your. I think that they've decided to hold a couple back for the game against Liverpool. And Didi and Vardy are the main two in there.
Yeah. You sort of can't blame them for it. If you're a Leicester fan and you're looking at that on paper, you know, the two games, City away and Liverpool at home, you'd have to back yourself Liverpool at home. That's the most winnable out of the two. I think Vardy had a bit of a hamstring was a problem against us. He doesn't take a penalty, does he, at the end? So whether that's even more, whether he's carrying a knock and he's just thought, depending on how the game's going, I might bring him on. But obviously with him scoring three goals, he might have thought it's not necessary, and then we'll save
exactly
him for
what he said, Bart. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah. He said Vardy had the hamstring. He almost said, I don't know why I put him on the bench.
Yeah.
He said he had a hamstring. I just did not want to use him at all.
Yeah, it's probably the nine sub thing, isn't it? The manager's probably just trying to fill benches. But yeah, I think they will look at it as a more winnable game against us. And I think they'd be right too. I think their fans will be bang up for it. You know, it is an easy place to go, and it tends to be a good atmosphere there. I think the cup thing will play a part in it. The fact that, you know, the kind of game that was, both supporters added a bit, and a good game of football. And I think, you know, it's one with Rodgers, we touched on again in the last show about this, where he's sort of, although he's quite, you know, he's done a very good job there, he's sort of quietly hanging on in there, and he's just doing enough. You know, he sold in interviews after the game against us, he sold it a sort of a heroic, you know, defeat in a way, when it was really, you know, if they fell apart, really. They had that game one and a half time, and they allowed Liverpool to get back into it, and they allowed us to make it a game that we wanted to, and end to end. And, you know, it wasn't this, oh, we come to Anfield. It was Liverpool's second string side with a half of kids playing in that game. And I think he'll have done the same again yesterday against City. He'll have sold it, as, you know, all these things happen. You know, you come to the best teams, you know, we've put up a good fight. You know, the 4-0 down after 20 minutes, that's not, if that's Liverpool, if that's Man United, that's not acceptable, is it? But, you know, as we've said, you know, as we've said before, that you feel like because it's Leicester, they sort of get away with it, because no one's going to hold them to account. No one's going to turn around and be like, why are Leicester 4-0 down after 20 minutes? Because it is still a little old Leicester, isn't it? When really, you know, the fourth, fifth best team in the country. So he'll want to make things right against us, I'm sure. And I think it'll be a tough game.
He does Tielemans on 70, which, again, I suspect is with an eye on the idea that Tielemans is starting against us on the night of the 28th. He does Maddison for the duration, so Maddison gets the full 90. He does Iheanacho for the duration, he gets the full 90. Luckman gets the full 90. Harvey Barnes wasn't even on the bench for the game against City. Feels as though he could be out, Rob. I think what we could be looking at is a back three, with Castagne, Amati and Vestergaard across that three. Thomas one side, Albright in the other. A couple of midfielders, probably Sumar and Tielemans. And then some combination of Vardy, Daka, Iheanacho, Maddison, Luckman, Perez maybe, but probably not up front. You're picking sort of three from that list of players I've just sort of given there, as maybe one who's a runner, like Luckman, who looked to run in behind and carry the ball, one who's creative, like Maddison, and then one who's all about playing on the shoulder, Vardy or Daka. That's what I think we'll face.
Did he play, what was the formation second half? Guardiola was actually full of praise about how Rodgers changed.
So yeah, he goes a bit asymmetrical, so he basically plays Castagne as almost at right back and Albright at right wing back, Thomas at left wing back, and then Luckman ahead of Thomas. So Vesta, it's like a back, you know, one of those shapes.
It's where a two up front.
It's a three and a four. Maddison and Iheanacho are around the front, but it's not. And Luckman, he's got those three all on the pitch, but precisely where they're doing the bits, they're a bit fluid, I think.
People forget there is an option of a 3-5-2. We've got so used to thinking three at the back equals 3-4-3. You know, you go back to the 90s, the default formation was 3-5-2, which gave you a lot in midfield. And I think. The lesson he will have learned from the City and the Liverpool League Cup game is he's got to be more secure at the back, because they're wide open. And by all accounts, they were more secure at the back in the second half. I suppose they couldn't be less secure. But so I think it'll be something that looks a bit like a 3-5-2, giving some one of the five licence to break to support.
I think it'll be Sumar, Tielemans and Maddison.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yes. Well, where will Ndidi play then? Because he'll
centre half.
Oh, you think he'll play centre half alongside Vestergaard and Castagne? Effectively,
possibly. Or he might decide he can't be bothered with Vestergaard because he's not had much time with him yet, and he's a big lummox.
Vardy is the question, whether he gambles on him, or he might go like, I just don't care, I'm going to play him into injury because he always gets a goal against Liverpool, or he thinks he gives us a good half hour.
The thing I would say for Rodgers and for Leicester, current climate, is 1st of Jan, 3 p.m, they've got Norwich at home.
Yeah, so
and you've got to win that with all your ambitions. You know, this is game 19. You've not played Liverpool or City yet. You've now played City twice. You're about to get Liverpool out the way. It almost feels to me as though once you get the Liverpool game out the way, if you're the sort of manager Rodgers is, you can say, right, season starts 1st of Jan. What you don't want to do, I would say, is flog someone to the point that they're then out for the whole of January when you need to actually put you know, they've got, just to run through it, you know, it's Leicester, Norwich, then it's the Cup, then it's Leicester, Burnley, they've got, and then even Leicester, Brighton. Yeah, if you're Leicester, you've got to be looking at that. How do we make sure we're getting 9 points from them? Liverpool's just Liverpool, but maybe I'm wrong.
You know, I think you're 100% right. I mean, even if take it to reverse the roles, if it was Salah with this, on the cusp of this hamstring injury, the hamstring injury bad enough that he couldn't take a penalty, by the way, Rodgers said. He didn't want to risk his hamstring on a penalty. I mean, that's saying something. And that he just put him on the bench for the sake of it. I don't think you jeopardise the next month of the season, where he sounds like he's on the edge of a serious injury, but he's also on the edge of a recovery too. So you're absolutely, just to reiterate your point, I wouldn't risk him against Liverpool. And if you did, maybe it's 15 minutes, you know, at the end. But Rodgers is a bit mad, so you just don't know. I'm looking on paper. Leicester have got a lot of injuries here. Let's be right. That defence is very, very makeshift.
Yeah.
The midfield, the best of the midfield... the best of the midfield is in defence, and Didi, and the next best of the midfield, well, the same is Tielemans, has played a lot of football now quietly in the last week, so he's not going to be as freshest if Liverpool want to leg them round. And Liverpool, mind you, are now rested, and not overly rested, but arguably, because it's not like being a 2 week COVID break, it's only been 5 or 6 days. So you know what? You know, I've looked at the betting on my compo bets. It's 4-1 the draw, something like 8-1 for Leicester to win. The bookies are fairly, as Liverpool are something like 72%. It's not an absolute guarantee win, but we're strong favourites here.
I think I struggle to see a scenario where Liverpool don't win the game. I think given the condition of Leicester's squad, you know, you look at the injuries they've got, the state of the defence, the manner in which Rodgers sets his side up. So, you know, without good defenders to bail him out, then his side struggle anyway. But I think there's a wider issue in that. Rob's just touched on it. Liverpool's first team have had best part of a week not playing footy. And Leicester's played yesterday.
Against Manchester City.
Against Man City. So we can talk about, well, he only had 70 and he didn't play, but their first 11 that they could choose played against us when we rested some of our lads.
Yeah.
So they've had that game, then another one, and then they're going to come and Liverpool have had a week off.
And 48 hours, and seven of those lads are going again from City have only had 48 hours. Exactly. Klopp wouldn't pick them.
No, exactly, and that's the issue for Leicester. And I think from a wider context issue, I can understand the Premier League wanting to carry on with fixtures, but I think there is a questionable integrity issue around asking the team to play two games in two days, and then another team who they're playing
haven't.
As I've had a week off. By not, it's just one of them. It's just the way it's gone. They didn't have to pick that League Cup side, but they picked.
And Leeds didn't, you know, Leeds might have been fully fit, flying, coming into the game at Anfield, but that doesn't happen either. And now Liverpool are absolutely... And
Liverpool are as rested as they could ever be for a Christmas fixture. So, you know, just on that basis, regardless of the teams, the players, anything, you'd say they're going to win because they haven't just ran a race yesterday. They've had a week off, and I think that combines with, oh, by the way, Liverpool are fucking great, and have been until they had the diddle where we lost our whole spine and still drew the game and could have won it. I just think we'll slap them everywhere, to be honest, and I think it'll be almost unfair, and I wouldn't be surprised if Klopp comes out after it and says, you can't treat that as a real game because it's not fair on them because they've played 2 days ago, and he goes big on trying to re-emphasise his point about what are you doing? Why didn't you listen to us when we said you cancel this fixture and have a breather and blah, blah, blah. I think that I struggle to see how they, unless some mad turn of events, they have loads of luck and we batter them and can't score, or we turn up on our shite, which doesn't tend to happen anymore, then I just don't see how we don't win.
Just on that, I think the mad thing is, you know, looking at the subs that he's made, the team he's picked, Vestergaard and Marty, Luke Thomas, Vestergaard and Marty haven't had that much footy.
Mm.
And then suddenly they're asked to go back-to-back. Not just back-to-back, by the way. They're not playing Norwich and Crystal Palace. They're playing Manchester City and Liverpool here. And they're asked suddenly to go back-to-back and pull that together. Dewsbury Hall, it's his first proper season playing Premier League footy. Suddenly he's getting lashed into back-to-back Manchester City, Liverpool in 48 hours. There was the one last midweek. I'm with you. Like, I can't see how... Genuinely, if they play a back three and Vestergaard's left-hand side of the three, I don't see how he doesn't get mincemeat made out of him. And if they play a back two, and Vestergaard's left-hand side of the two, I don't see how he doesn't get him to meet made out of him. And that's, I like him as a player, and I thought he looked like he could be a real, he could do well for someone when he was at Southampton. But to be dropped into this now, I just, I as you say, you are on the verge of saying this just isn't entirely fair.
No, it doesn't seem it. I mean, anything can happen, and we don't know, you know, you look last week going to Tottenham, you'd back Liverpool to win all day, and then the day before, there's three players out, and you're thinking, is this going to go ahead? There's nothing to say that might not happen again. You know, there might not be another diddle, but as it stands, you just look and think, I'm looking at it thinking they just need a bit of encouragement to be beat, and that encouragement might be us scoring in the first 5 minutes and them going, save your legs, because we've got Norwich in 3 days, and there's 0 points anyone getting injured, there's 0 points, you know. And I don't know, I feel sorry, like that Vestergaard's a good point, is, you know, you look at the way Rodgers sets his sides up, and you look, I thought he was a decent player at Southampton, but it reminds me of when Lovren came to Liverpool, and Rodgers was like, yeah, go on, fill all them gaps. And he was like, what? Come and stand in front of me here. I said, I'm not going over there. And I feel like that's maybe happening for him a little bit again. And yeah, I agree with you. I think Liverpool will run them ragged.
Got to not give them any encouragement, Paddy. I think that's the big deal here. Liverpool have got to not give them any encouragement, Leicester. I think it's got to start. They've got to start strong and just effectively say, you don't get out. This is your reality. What team are you going with in that context?
I think you go as strong as you can, really. I think, you know, we've touched on there about how it's a benefit to us, that the fact that we've had a break. It also, I know it's not that long of a break, it's just a week, but, you know, Liverpool can sometimes struggle when they've not played for a while and the full players, but I think going into Chelsea as well, I think you want your best team possible.
And it's a 5-day gap to Chelsea.
Yeah, exactly. I think you want your best team possible, having six. Rhythm and a performance.
Or five, sorry.
So I don't think there'd be too much change at all from what you'd go with. I think the only question I think you've got there is, I think with Thiago, isn't it? I think you'd imagine Fabinho and Van Dijk have had enough days training in them, coming back from COVID, that they should be fine to play. You know, Van Dijk definitely, you know, he puts him in first game of the season against Norwich. There's no questions if he's there, he's playing. And I'd imagine the same with Fabinho. I think with Thiago, I think it depends how long he's had. It looks from pictures.
You don't need to risk him, is the thing I'd say, because I really want him to start Keita, and I'd expect to start Henderson.
Thiago starts with his cap on and a little cheeky waistcoat, and he struts around. Yeah, I agree with you. Sorry I interrupted, but I agree. Keita
plays in the 4-0, doesn't he? I'm right in thinking that the year we win the league, it's Henderson, Wijnaldum and Keita, and Keita plays really well that day. Yeah. And obviously he's coming off the back of a really good cameo against them in the cup game. I think he's got a decision to make. I could see that, to be honest. I could see him thinking, you know, if we don't need to play Thiago, why would we don't need him struggling? So why bother with it? Especially when you'd imagine Chelsea goes that midfield. I think there's also a case for Chamberlain as well, to be honest. If there's the three midfield players, I think he's been playing quite well lately. I think that's the only one, really.
Question marks. So let's just say Alisson starts in goal, Trent right back, Šimić has left back because we can't pick Robertson anyway, Van Dijk at the heart of the defence. Fabinho, unless there's something we don't know, you've got to presume starts. I think Henderson starts. He's just he had a 60 minutes against Leicester. Salah starts. Question marks are of Firmino, Jota, and Mane. Who do you think he goes for, Ben?
I think he plays Firmino and Mane, and I think he rests. I think Jota misses out. I think Firmino enjoys playing against these. I think the one thing they won't want is someone like him just dragging defenders, you know, lads who are defenders as well.
Yeah.
All over the pitch with his movements and his link and play. So I think he'll go Firmino. I think he'll go Keita or Chamberlain as the midfield, and I think it'll be Matip as the other centre half.
I'm not sure he can drop Jota, because if you take Mo Salah off the planet for a minute, Jota's the hottest striker in Europe at the moment. I don't think you cannot start him. I think if there's a case for not starting him for tactical reasons, I think it's more at Chelsea than this one, in a sense, because Firmino is a bit more of a midfielder than Jota. So I think there's a case for that switch then. That's what I'm going to guess on, although I think Jota could start both. I think Keita is the shoe-in alongside Fabinho and Henderson, assuming Fabinho's hit the ground running up post-COVID. I think the subs would be preordained in that sense, in as much as Thiago could, because I think he'd like Thiago for Chelsea. if he's fit. So I think you pull Keita off on 70 or 60 and you put Thiago on to get his legs back up to speed. And I think you possibly look somewhere along the line of Henderson dropping back into the six and Chamberlain coming on for Fabinho. That kind of move, I think, it's a nice set of options to pre-plan, I think, this game.
Centre-half?
I think it's got to be Matip and Van Dijk, hasn't it? Although Konate really showed he can deal with what Leicester have to offer, but I think it's Matip and Van Dijk.
Konate wouldn't surprise me. I missed that one before. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he, you know, he's got a tendency, Klopp has need to just go with the player at one point and say, right, you're in now. And I think he has been impressive. I think his performance against Spurs was really good. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if he looks at that and thinks, you know, we've got a while until the big Champions League games, haven't we? Now it's February before that starts again. You think Matip's shown plenty of times, you know, since we've had him, that he can just be dropped in. So if there was ever a period over the next couple of months where you think Konate's struggling a bit, Matip can just come in. It's not like he needs 4 or 5 to get into it. You can just drop him in. He's done that in derbies before and things in the past. So that wouldn't surprise me if Klopp thinks with Leicester's pace, whether they start Vardy or Iheanacho, you know,
or Daka.
Yeah, just go with this lad. He's playing really well. He's confident. He's starting to really come into his own. I've felt, you know, when someone looks just confident and looks like they're backing themselves now. He's not second guessing at all. And even in some of his early performances, when I think he did quite well, there's still that thing where he's getting dragged out and he's not sure whether to fully commit to a challenge. Or I think now he looks like he feels like he belongs here. And I think he knows he's a quality player, and he knows Liverpool now. He knows the system. He knows what he should be doing. So that wouldn't surprise me. And I think, and I agree with Rob as well on Jota. I think it's a hard sell to drop him. I know he has done before, and it's, you know, and I'm sure he's got complete faith in the manager Jota, and he'll trust his judgment. But he's playing that well at the moment, and we're talking about their defence and how much they're struggling, and talking about putting a few past them early and getting the game won and frightening the life out of them. If he starts Jota, Salah and Mane were almost likely to score, you'd say, for us. I think that's what you've got to go with. I think Firmino's not started, has he, in the league since he's come back from injury. It didn't look great against Tottenham. I know it was a bit of a mad game and it was fast paced, but he can sometimes struggle getting up to the speed. But I think if we're 3-0 up and there's half an hour to go, I think that'd be quite a nice one for Bobby to come on to and sort of just strut around and get back up to the pace of things. And then you've got a decision to make for Chelsea. But I think you've got to go Jota.
Okay. I think there's a chance Mane doesn't start one of the next two. And it wouldn't surprise me if it's Chelsea.
Do you not think with AFCON looming that it's just play them
while you can
and fuck it?
I think he's flogging them.
I think he might be right, but I think that the flip side is I think he'll want to beat Chelsea, and I think he might think his best way to beat Chelsea is to have the movement of Jota off that flank rather than the direct run of Mane.
He's done it at Old Trafford twice, hasn't he?
He's done it at Old Trafford twice. Mane really, really, really is... Mane and Robertson, to be fair, both Mane and Robertson, and I think there's mitigating circumstances around both, but in the home game when they go down to 10, both Mane and Robertson, I think, find it quite difficult. And I think there's a Chelsea thing where they quite like Azpilicueta, someone who loves one-on-one defending.
Yeah.
Just give me one-on-one defending. I've got to stop this fella. I'll just keep stopping him over and over. And I just wonder if the idea, instead of let it be a clear one-on-one battle, if you sort of see what I mean, a lad who's just going to float around a little bit might just appeal a tiny bit more against Chelsea, do them with movement rather than with directness.
I can see that if Robertson's fit.
Mm.
But Mane's so good defensively that you think
that's fair.
The only other the possible thing.
That's very fair, very, very fair indeed. And then there is also the idea that they're going to go away for AFCON anyway. So what, you know? But ultimately, I think that genuinely, I understand the flogged-on point, but I think we're sort of a bit past that bit. We've just got two games to win.
Yeah.
If you sort of see what I mean, what's the thing that's most likely to win me the game rather than I know what I'm going to do? I'm going to exhaust
well, every. You're going away, are you, for a month?
Yeah.
So how much distance?
Yeah.
Well, quite. You know,
there is I think the manager's a bit more professional, but I could be wrong.
There is a certain sense, though, that of getting them back into rhythm for Chelsea by picking them against Leicester. I mean, Mane and Salah now haven't kicked a ball since Tottenham, right? It's quietly 9-ish days. So there's a case of saying, hang on, I don't want it to be 2 weeks since two and a half weeks since Mane's played.
So I'd go with Mane, Jota and Salah, which is a bit hard lines on Firmino, but the idea of Firmino to be introduced, and I take your point about movements and all that, but I think he'll think, well, these lads can, I mean, you know, it's a Martin, indeed, Vestergaard, for fuck's sake. I think they'll think we can get something out of that regardless. But I think, as I say, the one I think the curveball might be that Mane does not start against Chelsea. And everyone will be shocked, not least because of the logic of, well, you've got them, surely you play them. Whereas I think that he might think a little bit different, and that might also include Tuchel. All right then, move forward very quickly. Again, if you're on the audio, we are going to have Robbie Scotcher talking about, well, Palace being rubbish against Spurs and Zaha being a dope. If you're on the video, we're just going to move right the way through. joined by Robbie Scotcher. Merry Christmas to Robbie from all of our listeners, I'm sure, to talk about Crystal Palace. Palace versus Tottenham, yes, or Tottenham versus Palace more accurately yesterday. And I think home or away did actually have a little bit of an impact, certainly in the move from Tottenham going 1-0 up to 2-0 up, Robbie. But I think the thing that appeared to have the most impact to me was the fact that the manager's not there. Whenever I've seen Palace this season, they've been well-drilled, well-organised, really well-disciplined, and they became a bit of a rabble first half, I thought, against Tottenham. It was sort of epitomised by Wilf Zaha, but he wasn't the only one, I'd say.
No, I mean, it felt like one of those... Good morning, by the way. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, everyone. Yeah, it got a bit Sunday league, didn't it, the defending? But basically, you kind of... Obviously, we had a few players out with COVID, and we had a slight injury to Marcus Gay. And what that did is he put Tompkins and Anderson in the back, which with Joel Ward on the right, that made us very slow. Yes. We pushed up a little bit too high. So we've got the balls in behind. We're pressing up top, but not enough. What you want when you play Spurs is you always try and, if you're Palace, you always try and play the Benteke, the big man up top, because Lloris never comes off his line. And you can always get joy out of headers. You can always get joy out of him winning balls. We lost that. And yeah, we were a bit of a rabble, to be honest with you. And it was one of those, I don't know, I watched it in the pub and I just sat there surrounded by Spurs fans just banging my head on the table. But they are in a good run of form. They were quite clinical. I thought they beat us well. I thought they knew exactly what they were doing. They saw the high line, they saw our lack of pace, and they just exploited it.
They did. They exploited, as you say, the lack of pace. The opening goal, it genuinely looks like every single Palace player is towing a caravan. It is quite something as to go in, to be honest with you, because it goes from a pretty innocuous situation to every Palace player almost. They might as well be. They might as well all stop. I was thinking that actually becomes an argument that they could just all stop rather than continue to do what they're doing, which is where they're getting outpaced by everybody up to and including Harry Kane. But it then just goes all badly wrong, I think, Robbie. And I think that's, you know, obviously what this means is there's no Zaha for the next one. Losing him is obviously going to be a bit of a blow to this team at the moment.
Five games.
He's out for five games. Oh, because of AFCON.
Yeah, he goes to AFCON. So that's that. I mean, on that first goal, there was a chance beforehand they should have scored. You were feeling, I thought we did well for half an hour, but you could feel it coming. And the reason the Palace players stopped, which is again quite Sunday league, they keep showing the clip of the goal. There's a second before that where Zaha gets taken out and it's a foul and we should have a free kick on their 30-yard line. 30-yard line, it's not American football, 30 yards out. And he doesn't give it. And it's one of about five free kicks that we didn't get through Wilf. And that's why the players stopped stupidly. And that's why Tompkins kind of ran out and did a stupid kick of the ball. And yeah, it's exactly what you shouldn't do in football. It's our fault. We all know you play to the whistle. Everyone shouts that to five-year-olds, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it is our fault. We are, you know, it's our own downfall. We've done it. But with Wilf, I mean... You could, again, it's weird, right? If you're a Palace fan, you love him. If you're not, he's a bit of a pantomime villain. And he plays in that game, and they set out to wind him up, absolutely, as most teams do. From the start of the game, him and John Moss have started going at each other. So there's about two or three fouls that Wilf didn't get that are pretty... You know, innocuous fouls. And the way it happens, and the reason that Zaha, you could tell, was so frustrating is because we're so slow at the back. He's picking the ball up now by the halfway line instead of 5 yards further up. So he's picking it up in a bad position. He's not picking it up to attack. And his job is to hold on to the ball. And he's lost it. And he's lost it because he's been fouled. But not like serious, like taken out fouls. Just elbows, kicks to the back of the leg, that sort of thing. And he slowly started talking at Moss. And you know... That then there's a period of about half an hour in a game that Wilf could always get sent off when that happens. And the second one is stupid. The first one, I didn't think it was a yellow card, personally, for me. But that said, after the second one, there would have been another one. He would have gone. It just went that way. And he's stupid for it, really. And I know he does play on the edge, and he does play better that way sometimes. And he does get kicked, and he does get that sort of thing. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't frustrated with him today. And not frustrated for the Spurs game. I think the game should have been called off. But I didn't want it to be called off because I don't think we're going to win it. And I'd rather get it out of the way. Do you know what I mean? But we're playing Norwich. Now, you want him at the Norwich game because we don't have Elise, we don't have Eze, we don't have Benteke. We're missing all the creative players, and now we're missing Wilf. So now we're going up there with a team from the Championship in 2008. Well, do you know what I mean? We're missing key ingredients in our team, and that's where he's let us down.
It is indeed. I mean, you know, you only got to look at that bench yesterday. It's Sean. The first 11 was strong, to be fair, to be fair to the decision to play the game. You know, that's a strong first 11, with the exception of the goalkeeper, who actually wasn't particularly at fault for any of the goals. You know, you struggle to sort of go away and say, well, he made a mess of that. It doesn't help, as you say before, the centre-half gets an injury, so it's slightly weakened there, although he can make the bench. So it does become, it'll be presumably Ayew, Edouard and Schlupp maybe, or Mateta, to play the game against Norwich. And that, therefore, it does make the idea, it should be 3 points, it should be a home banker, it really should be, shouldn't it, for Palace? Yeah. But now it becomes a little bit edgier.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, for the other goals as well, for the second goal, that header doesn't normally go in, because the reason that Moura's got there is because Gallagher's taken a knock on his leg and he was marking him. He'd just taken a knock and he stopped his run and the ball's just coming perfectly flighted ball. Anderson's got a standing start. He's always going to lose it. And another thing that annoyed me a little bit in the game, so I'll come to Norwich in a second, and I know people say this a lot, but Harry Kane, like, elbows Gallagher straight in the face, right? Elbows him in the face, treads all over him on the floor and doesn't get anything. Okay, fine. If you don't see that's a yellow, fair enough. Because it does impact his game when he gets a yellow, because he is a bit naughty. But then seconds later, Tompkins does the same thing, gets a yellow card. And you're just like, I don't mind if both are yellows or another are yellows, but you can't have one and not the other. It's really starting to, and Harry Kane just get, I know it's everyone says it's boring, but it's just, he gets away with so many dirty, naughty little things. Anyway, sorry, ran over.
Nope, more than fair enough. The Norwich game it could be a slog. And the one thing I think Palace supporters 4 or 5 days ago, everyone would have said, Tottenham, we get what we get. We go from there, but we should get to enjoy the 28th against Norwich. And all of a sudden, it looks as though it could be a massive slog.
Yeah. I mean, that said, we still have enough. We've still got, our midfield is still there. At the back, playing a high line against, say, Pukki, it's not such an issue. I mean, he's got pace, he's a good finisher, but we still have enough. Schluppi's a good player, you know. Edouard was chasing shadows a bit against Spurs, but he wasn't getting the ball. It will be different against Norwich. He'll have a lot more of the ball. Jordan Ayew, I didn't think, had a bad game yesterday. He was just getting in the way, do you know what I mean? I think we've still got enough to win the game. I think we will win the game, and I think I'm going to love it.
So we've moved right the way through. Welcome back. Robbie, as ever, the absolute business. Scratch the other games on the 28th. Palace, obviously, against Norwich. It's 3 points that Palace have to get. Spurs versus Tottenham. Tottenham, I'm not enjoying watching Tottenham enjoy themselves, to be quite honest with you, and I'd like it to stop soon. Southampton seems a good place for that to happen. Watford versus West Ham. West Ham suddenly seem goosed, but no one's seen Watford kick a ball in what feels like 5 years. Couldn't even list yet 8 players who play for them, other than the fact that they've got about 40 professionals and seemingly still couldn't get a squad out due to COVID. Questions should be asked.
I've heard of Dennis.
Dennis. Yeah. They've got so many players, and yet they are all interchangeable.
Yeah.
Kiko Femenia remains a Watford footballer, even though he literally, if he walked into the studio right now, I'd think he's been sent in on work experience to do the cameras.
Who put the ball in the blue shite net?
Kiko Femenia. We'll end where we started. Chelsea, Brighton, Brentford, Manchester City. Just very quickly, it just doesn't feel like two easy games, Paddy, when you actually see them written down like that. Brentford will get battered, but they will factor getting battered into their team talk, team selection. Whole outlook will be, we will get battered for long periods, but I get the impression that ground, that set of players, it loved simply beating Watford. It loved landing one on Arsenal. It loved a 3-3 against Liverpool. It even loved a manful 1-0 defeat against Chelsea when they were the better side and they could clap them off. I think they will be desperate for some Christmas cheer against Manchester City.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, I know you mean battered in terms of, you know, periods in the game, but I think I'm right in saying they haven't been actually battered scoreline-wise all season, especially at their place as well. So whilst I was looking at that fixture, I did think, oh, it could go two ways. It'll either be literally like a 4 or 5 nil, or it'd be a really tough game for City. I'm starting to think now, I think if City win, I don't think it is by a high scoreline. I think they're going to have to really work for it because everyone has had to there, you know, all season. I think, you know, they've had a few issues, haven't they? But, you know, with Ivan Toney back now, they were unlucky yesterday against Brighton. They did come back into that game. I think it'd be a tough one for City. I would back City to win it. It won't be easy at all, though, and it's sort of a nice one for us, I think, to have a look at City and think, say, sort of get a bit of hope in terms of if they've struggled here like this at Brentford, what can other sides do? I think they'll win. But now it's no battle of laughs unless you're a Brentford fan because they're having a great time.
Yeah, I'm looking at the three fixtures that us City and Chelsea have got are all similar hardnesses for different reasons. I think they're, although, you know, we're confident about Leicester, I think they'd be looking at that and going, at the end of the day, Leicester are, well, you said earlier, the fifth best team in the country. That's not an ideal fixture to go to their ground. Would we rather go to Leicester than Brentford? I think, yes, I would actually. Just right now, I would, but not normally. And Chelsea are at Brighton. Again, that's a hard one. Brighton are not dissimilar to
Chelsea are at home, but I don't think it makes much odds. No. Anything, I actually think that makes it harder for Chelsea because this is the big problem they've got, I think, is going to be, as Ben said before, it wouldn't surprise you if they had not just 3-0 at home by now until the end of the season. It wouldn't surprise me if they had 3-0 at home by now until the end of March.
Mm. No, and Brighton don't give up chances that readily when they're focused. So, yeah, it's an interesting day, actually, because it could break for one or two of the teams. One of us could be really sitting there going, oh, fucking hell, we've been pulled away for a more.
Yeah, I think City will be all right against Brentford.
The big thing I think City have got against Brentford, Ben, which we didn't have, not really, and Chelsea had a bit of, is the video. The one thing that City can do beforehand is go, you know what these did to Liverpool? Look at it, watch it, take it all in, this is what's going to come. For better or worse, this is what's going to come. Look at all these chances Liverpool had early where they didn't counter-attack well enough. If you counter-attack well enough, you'll break this game apart. And I think that's the big boost that City have got that we didn't have. They've got the warnings.
Yeah, definitely. And I think they'll be all right, to be honest. I think you're right. They've done a bit of a number on us in the way that they scored the goals and the way they overloaded down Trent's side a little bit. I just think City have got too much for them. I understand. I can see that, you know, I'm as game as the next man for a big crowd and then getting dragged down to a level, volleyed all over the pitch and beat 1-0. Fucking let's bring it on, you know what I mean? But I just don't see it. Whereas Brighton are very good, I think, quietly very good. I think Potter's excellent. I think if I was in charge at Liverpool, I'd be quietly in his ear saying, don't go nowhere else. You know, you'd thought of very highly. You know, don't go anywhere else to rule yourself out of a future job at Anfield is what I'd be saying, because I think he's excellent and I think he sets his team up very well. They're very difficult to beat. They're very, very difficult for a top team to play. Do you know what I mean? And it's a
yes, I do.
In the way that he asks the same questions as other top teams get asked by other top teams, you know what I mean?
No, very much so. Like, I think it would almost suit him to only play the top eight.
Yeah.
Like, I think if he said, if there was a league of just the top eight and they were the ninth, I think he'd say, we'll finish sixth in this league.
Yeah.
And I think that's really interesting. Even with the current crop of players, he'd go, what, we just played, you know, we play all these four times, we'll finish sixth in this league.
Yeah, because I think he's very good at picking weaknesses in otherwise unbelievable strength. You know, when we played them, They were very good at pulling us apart and finding a weakness and frustrating and hitting on the break and I'd back them to get something there, I think. It's gonna be a tough game for Chelsea anyway, put it that way.
They love a draw, don't they? Yes, they were the first win since September and they've only lost three in that time. They've drawn all the others. So if you're looking at Chelsea thinking, you know,
Chelsea look like
they wouldn't be surprised if they have a few 0-0s at home now. It's Brighton, the one where you think, well, that'll be one of them, because as everyone said, they're well set up. They love a draw. You could see them getting out with a point.
If I was Potter, I'd just say, just don't make mistakes. Because Chelsea, to me, look, they're a team that they've got enough quality that if you make mistakes, they'll get their goals and they'll win. Mm. Villa was absolutely that yesterday. Chelsea didn't deserve those points, but Villa just made a couple.
Even Leeds, like, for a couple of weeks earlier, wasn't it? They got away with that one with Leeds giving away daft penalties and things, and that could have been another draw or defeat if that hadn't been for Leeds' own doing.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent stuff. It's been the Anfield Wrap. Very much. Thank you very much indeed to Ant, Prep, prepping his day before Newcastle United away, and to Robbie as well, looking ahead to Norwich and back on the game against Spurs. But thank you very much to Paddy Fitzsimons, Rob Gutman and Ben Johnson for making their way into the studio on this. It is a bank holiday Monday. It is definitely still Monday. Tuesday to come, Liverpool go to Leicester. We'll have team talk. If you subscribe to the Anfield Wrap to come, there'll be a preview as well if you subscribe to the Anfield Wrap as well. And then everything you need post-match. It's a massive, massive game on Tuesday night for the Reds. And broadly speaking, in Ben Johnson's camp, I think if it goes a certain way, Liverpool will absolutely whack them. And afterwards, we can have a big chat about why it wasn't fair with smiles on our faces. Sports Social Podcast Network.